This week's Parshas Pekudei. It's very unusual that Vayakhel and Pekudei are going to be separated, but this week it is because we had a Shana Mu'uberes. We had 2 months of Adar, so we have to stretch out the Parshios a little bit. Parshas Vayakhel and Pekudei are really a repetition of what we already spoke about in Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, which were all of the instructions of how to properly build a Mishkan. Now, as we mentioned when we learned Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, all of the malachos on Shabbos, all of the 39 prohibitions on Shabbos are learned from the Hakamas HaMishkan. Who knows, when was there an obligation to write something in the Mishkan? When did they have to write anything? Right, we have one of the malachos on Shabbos is Kosev. So what required writing in the Beis HaMikdash? Correct. So they had in the construction of the Mishkan, Shendel, right? Got it. Okay, in the construction of the Mishkan, they had to put up all of the poles, all the beams that were going to hold up the outside of the structure. And in doing so, it said in the Gemara, we're told that each one had to have a letter on it. It had to say Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. They had to number all of them around. Now, you ask yourself, why did they have to number them around? The reason why is because they used to move from one place to another. The Mishkan was always in motion. And each time they moved, how are you supposed to move a building? You have to take it apart, you have to dismantle everything, and then bring it to the new location and build it once again. Now, how are you supposed to know how to build it once again? The answer is, well, if everything is numbered, it makes it very easy. But my question to you is the following. Why do you need to number it if all the sockets and the beams are exactly the same? You only have to number an item that you need to build when it's important that you put this piece in one place because it's not going to fit in another place. But let's say you buy something from IKEA, right? And it's a dresser that Amir Tashem, all of you are going to build in your own homes, right? So you build a dresser in your home. It has a number of shelves. It doesn't have to say that shelf 1 is going to be numbered as 1 and the second shelf is 2. All of them have the same number on them because it doesn't matter if you put this shelf on top or on the bottom. It's the same size, correct? Does that make sense, Shani? So then why, when it came to the building of the Mishkan, did we need to have numbers on each of the poles if, after all, the poles were all the same size? So what do I care if you put it on this side or the other side? This question is such a good question that the Gemara in Maseches Menachos asked that question. And the Gemara wants to know, why did they have to number the beams? Why did they have to write on them a mark of where they belonged in the Mishkan? And the Gemara tells us a principle, Malim HaKodesh Ve'ein Moridin. The Gemara says that we assume if something takes on a status of being very holy, you are not allowed to bring it down a level of holiness from what it was originally. And therefore, we say, if this beam used to be used right next to the Kodesh Kadashim, if this beam was made for the construction of that part of the Mishkan, that is considered to be holier than a beam that was put on the other side, which was just the entrance, the doorway. It's not the same status. Now, that's a very interesting concept. I would have said, the whole Mishkan is one entity, everything is Kodesh, everything is holy, but yet it's not that way. Where do we find the reference in Chumash, and I'll give you a little hint, in Sefer Bereishis, where do we find such a thing that I would have said that everything is considered to be like helping the same cause, and they're all considered to be just as holy as each other, and yet that's not the case. Anybody knows? I'll give you another hint. It's from a story in Sefer Bereishis, like not a halacha in Sefer Bereishis, yeah?
The trees.
What about the trees? Not exactly what I was thinking. Try a little later in Sefer Bereishis. Doing great, yeah? Yaakov Avinu. The Mefarshim asks, Yaakov Avinu, the Medrash says, Vayifka b'makom v'yalen sham. Yaakov Avinu goes to sleep and he puts stones all around himself. Why is he putting stones? Because he wants a bed. He wants to be comfortable. I mean, as comfortable as you can be outside. So he wants to be comfortable. And the Rashi quotes the Medrash that says, Allah yaniach tzadik es rosho. All the stones were fighting and saying, no, I want to be the stone that Yaakov Avinu is going to use to put his head on. What do you care if he puts his head on you or he puts his feet on you? The answer is the head is considered to be much more important than any other part of the body. And therefore, all of the stones wanted to be under the head of Yaakov Avinu. And we don't say just because you're all serving the same purpose, therefore you're all considered to be the same level of sanctity. In fact, we find the Gemara tells us that there is a major demarcation between the different levels of Kedusha that we have in the Beis HaMikdash itself. Right? We have a Kodesh HaKadashim, which is Holy of Holies, and then we have a little bit less than that is the Kodesh, then we have the Azara, then we have the outside, the Harabayis, and we have Yerushalayim, which is less than that. The Mishnah writes in Maseches Kelim, Eser Kedusho, saying there are 10 different levels and layers of holiness, of sanctity in Eretz Yisrael, and they're not all considered to be the same, even though many of them are serving the same purpose. So here as well, we have a concept of Malim HaKodesh V'lo Moridim, which means once something is put and designated to have a certain level of sanctity, you cannot bring it down a level. So if I was the being lucky enough to be at the place where the Kodesh Kadashim was, the holiest place in the Beis HaMikdash, then I should be lucky enough to always have that choice, and I should never be downgraded to be anywhere else. That's the concept of Malim HaKodesh V'lo Moridim. From there, there's a major discussion when it comes to a certain mitzvah that we do at a certain time of the year, as to whether or not we need to mark them as well. Which mitzvah is that? So, building a sukkah. Do I need to mark the beams of my sukkah in order to make sure that whichever beam was on the north side of the sukkah last year, that's the place that it has to be next year? Well, I would say to myself, what's the difference? As long as I put it up and it fits and it works, it should be the same. It shouldn't matter. There are those who say that you should number the panels of the sukkah. And the answer to that is, you don't have to. What is the distinction between Beis HaMikdash and the sukkah? What is the answer? Right. So you're saying it's temporary. Temporary is not really a distinction because the Mishkan was also temporary. So what is the answer? The answer is, when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, you can argue that one part of it is holier than the other. This is where the Kodesh Kadashim is. This is the Holy of Holies. If you're the being that was lucky enough to be there, you are in a holier spot than somebody else. But when you talk about a sukkah, if part of the sukkah is going to be on this side and part of the sukkah is on the other side, what's the difference? The whole sukkah is the mitzvah. Wherever I sit in the sukkah is considered to be holy. Everything is considered to be one entity. And therefore, when it comes to the sukkah, that would not be something that we would generally be so concerned about. And that is why you will find many people do make marks on their sukkah because it's just easier to put it together. But you don't really have to, al pi halacha, because it doesn't really make a distinction which part of the sukkah, the beam, is going to ultimately go on. All of them are considered to be equal as far as the mitzvah is concerned. Anybody know another mitzvah where we find this discussion? You may not know it because women are not chayiv in this mitzvah, and that is the mitzvah of wearing a talis. Tzitzis, talis. So wearing a talis. How many of you have members of your family who wear a talis with an atara? Wow, very few. What? No, anything. Really? Your father was an Atara? Okay, so why do we have an Atara? So, some say the reason why you have an Atara is in order that you should have silver in the middle of the talus. It's really nice. Zeh keli banveyu, the same reason why we have a silver menorah, the same reason why we have a nice esrog box, and we do all these other things. So we have something nice when it comes to the talus as well. But if that's the case, then why is it on the top of the head? It's pretty annoying. When I daven and I have this silver shaking around in my head, why not put it on the bottom? It would be much simpler to do that. The answer to that is no. The Magen Avraham quotes from Shallah, I believe, who says, the part of the talus that's covering my head is obviously much more significant than the part of the talus that's covering the rest of my body. And therefore, the Shallah writes, that would be based on this idea that we find by the Mishkan, that when one part of a mitzvah has the opportunity to be significantly greater than any other part of it, you should give it that same privilege every time moving forward. And therefore, by a talus, we would say, if you have been wearing this talus and this part of the talus has been over your head the entire time, you should continue to do that every time you wear it as well. And that is why we make a demarcation by having that on top. However, there are some who disagree and say in the opposite direction, you specifically should not. Did I tell that story about somebody in Stern who asked me about the Hasidic Rebbe they met? No? I thought I told this class. Somebody just asked me this year. They wanted to know, there was a Hasidic Rebbe coming to town. I don't know who he is, and whatever. I don't know how these things work, but this woman is looking for a shidduch. She graduated Stern a number of years ago, and she was here one day. She bumped into me in the hallway, and she said, I have a question for you. So she said, I just went to this Hasidic Rebbe, and I asked him that I need a bracha for a shidduch. And he told her that she should buy a talis for her prospective chassan. So she wanted to know, like, what's the story with that? I was like, I don't know. How do you know? Maybe he's going to be like really tall and he's going to need a different size talus, or really heavy and he's going to need like a different measurements. Like, I'm not sure how that works exactly. So unless you're going to buy like a bunch of different sizes, I don't know. So, Amir Tashem, when all of you have the opportunity to buy your husband's talisim, I think that's the way it works. He buys you a shetel, you buy him a talis. I don't know exactly what the breakdown is, but whenever that time comes, when you buy it for him or you go with him to the store to buy it for himself, whatever it may be, and you're thinking about buying an atar, the question is, should we buy one or not? And the Shalah Kaddish is mentioned, as we mentioned, says it would make a lot of sense because you want to make sure the top of the talis is always on top of the head, the same way it was the first time you wore the talis. Others say no. The whole point of the talis is, imagine if I take a scarf and I just like some reform congregations have a little scarf talis, right? Right? I'm not making fun. It's like, that's what they are. So you have a scarf talis. Is that really the mitzvah of tzitzis or not? The answer is no. It has to be a bega that covers your body. So it's not really chayiv in tzitzis like that. Like, you ever wonder how come when I wear a scarf, I don't put tzitzis on the fringes? It is a four-cornered garment. It's squared off at the edges. It should be. The answer is because it's not a beged like that. It's not draped over you. So therefore, it's not chayiv in the mitzvah. So other achronim say, if you're going to emphasize the head of the talis more so than the rest, you're basically saying, what's important about this beged is just the top. But if you only had a top, if you had a hood on top of my head, that wouldn't be chayiv in tzitzis. The reason why it's chayiv is because it envelops my whole body. It's because it covers my body. And therefore, we would say that is something that is obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis. And therefore, if you emphasize the head more than the rest of the body, you're basically showing that you don't care about the beged that covers the rest of your body. And that is why you'll notice, if you ever go to a Hasidish shul, and there's a real Hasidish rav, they have an atara not only on the top, they also have a silver atara right through the middle. There's like a sash in the middle of the talus, and they have a silver strip in the middle. That's why, because they want to show, of course, we want to beautify the talus and we want to show that the head is the head, but we also want to show that the rest of the beged is very significant and important as well. Anyway, all of that is from our parsha. And in fact, the Gemara says in Menachos another point. We're told in this week's parsha, Vayakem Moshe es HaMishkan. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu built the Mishkan. Now I ask you, how old is Moshe Rabbeinu at this time? What? He's pretty old. What? Moshe Rabbeinu was 80? No. Moshe Rabbeinu died when he was 120. Right? They were in the Midbar for 40 years. So that means he was 80 when it started. Right? When they came out of Mitzrayim, he was 80. So from 80 to 120 is when he led the Jewish people through the Midbar. And then he dies. He says, Anochi Esrim, Mea Ve'esrim Shana Anochi Hayom, I'm 120 years old today. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that's it. You're going to pass on from this earth. 120 was the time when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu at this point was for sure over 80. He must have been at least 90. Can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gadol Hador, the leader of the generation, undisputed king of the Jewish people, right? It's not like there were any dissenters at the time. It was Moshe Rabbeinu and that was it. So you have Moshe Rabbeinu, who's the leader of the Jewish people, in his 90s, and the Torah says, Vayakem Moshe es HaMishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu built the Mishkan. What does that mean? Moshe Rabbeinu, imagine if you walked on the street and you saw a 90-year-old trying to carry all their groceries from the store to their apartment. You would stop everything you're doing, I hope, and you would go help them, even if it meant you would come late to my class. You would stop whatever you were doing. You would help that person. I'm not going to let them do this by themselves. Of course I'm going to help you. So what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? You have millions of Jews together with him in the desert. And everybody's there doing absolutely nothing, actually, right? Nobody's at work and nobody's in the office. Everyone's just sitting in their tents. And they all look out and say, hey, so what should we do today? Look out there, Moshe Rabbeinu is there. Like, isn't that nice? He's building the Mishkan. It's so beautiful. Why don't you bother to go out and offer to help him? He's in his 90s. He's a very important person. Why not go do something to assist Moshe Rabbeinu? No? Good question. So the Gemara answers, the reason why is because, of course, everybody wanted to help Moshe Rabbeinu. The problem was, Male Makodesh V'lo Maridin. Since Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed the first time around to build a Mishkan, it would be a Horada Mikdusha. It would be a downgrade if any of us would have gone to build it the next time. The Mishkan would say to itself, hey, last time around I had Moshe build me. Now I'm stuck with Shechter? Like, come on. This is like This is terrible. And from there, the Gemara says, Malam HaKodesh V'lo Maridin. I asked the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin. That's the Gemara Maseches Menachos that we just mentioned. But the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin asked the following. What are we told in Maseches Kiddushin? Daf Ayin. No, Olivia. What is it? Says, yeah, you know.
I just have a question.
I thought you knew the answer. I was very impressed. Yeah? Yeah, but then you have no choice, right? If you have no choice, you have no choice. But if Moshe Rabbeinu is an option, I don't know. But the Gemara there says, "V'lo siyu echad haKohanim." The Torah goes out of its way to say Moshe Rabbeinu built it himself, and nobody helped him. What do you mean nobody helped him? Everyone was there. The answer is, everyone wanted to help him, but they were told not to help him. Now the Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, here's the problem. Parnes kivin shenismana alat zibur. I'm sorry, we didn't get to this yet. We're just having fun. Parnes kivin shenismana alat zibur. Aser sheyasa melacha b'fnei shlosha. The Gemara says if you have a parnes, means a community leader. Once you take the position of leadership, then you're not allowed to do malacha b'fnei shlosha. You're not allowed to do degrading work in front of other people. For example, let's say you have somebody whose car breaks down. So what do? I happen not to be handy. I don't know how to do anything. Really. I don't know how to do anything. So, I just don't. I'm sorry. As you know, everyone has the strengths. It's not mine. So, if I would get a flat tire, my wife would get out of the car and fix it. She knows how to do everything. I don't. So, the question would be, all right, we're normal people. If somebody would walk by my house and see that, you know, I'm under my car fixing something, all right, like, it wouldn't be a big deal. Imagine if you walk by the White House and you see the President of the United States sitting under his motorcade and like fixing a tire or, you know, screwing something into his car. So why are you laughing? Because it would be ridiculous. Why? But what do you mean? He also has a car. So he also has to take care of his car just like I have to. The answer is for Schechter to take care of his car is like, all right, makes sense. He's a normal person. If you're the President of the United States, it's not expected that you're going to take care of your own car. You're not going to change. You're not going to do an oil change and you're not going to change a tire, you're going to have other people doing it for you because the office that you represent is something that expects you to behave in a certain way. And therefore, says the Gemara, if a person takes a position of leadership in the community, you're not allowed to do certain activities in front of other people because it's degrading, because it's beneath you. Not beneath you, but beneath the office that you represent. So that's what the Gemara says. If that's true, how did Moshe Rabbeinu do this? Is that becoming of Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader of the Jewish people, the Adon HaNeviim? Does it make sense that Moshe Rabbeinu should be the one who is then going to build the Mishkan with his own two hands? He's going to come in with his toolbox. He's going to start sweating. He's going to sit on the floor and screw everything in and bang in all the nails. Does that really make sense? Is that really to kefi chvodo shel Moshe Rabbeinu? So how can Moshe Rabbeinu do it? Answers the Gemara as follows. The Gemara says, you're right. Really, once a person takes a position of communal leadership, they shouldn't do any of these kinds of things in public. But if the thing you're being asked to do is a mitzvah, then there's nothing to be ashamed of. You can't say, doing a mitzvah is beneath me. I'm above that. Yes, changing your tire is beneath you. And building your cabinet in your house is beneath you if you have a certain standard of living. But doing a mitzvah is not beneath you. You're just like everybody else. The Ribono Shel Olam expects all of us to do mitzvahs equally. And therefore, the Gemara assumes that if you are asked to do a mitzvah, it would not be beneath you to go ahead and perform it, even though you hold a very lofty position in the community and you represent a lot. It would never be considered beneath you to do that. And therefore, the Gemara says, you'd be allowed to build a makeh. What is the mitzvah of makeh? The mitzvah is that when I have a roof and there's a concern that somebody can fall off of the roof and get hurt or get killed, so it says, Lo sasim damim bibesecha, don't allow anyone to be in harm's way, and you have to build a fence around your roof. Says the Shulchan Aruch, who's supposed to build that fence? Now, you could hire a company, or if you're handy, you can do it yourself. If I know how to do it myself, and I happen to be the world's greatest personality, and I'm a very prominent person, don't be ashamed to do it. You're doing a mitzvah. You're doing a mitzvah, that's okay. The Chavos Yair, the Mishneh Berurah quotes the Chavos Yair. Chavos Yair was Rabbi Yair Bachrach. He lived in the 1600s. So the Chavos Yair writes in one of his tshuvas that he was asked, there was a rabbi in town who actually had a beautiful voice. I don't know if he says that he had a good voice or he knew how to play an instrument, one of the two. But usually, what's the rabbi's job at a chuppah? Usually the rabbi's job at a chuppah is to be in the Masada Kedushin, or whatever, something of that nature. Here, the rabbi was asked by the Chasan and Kala not to be Masada Kedushin and not to do the things that he normally would do, but to sing under the chuppah. And he felt very uncomfortable. Like, this is not, I happen to have a nice voice, but this is not what I do. And his question was, should I lower myself and do what they're asking me to do? Or should I actually stick to my standard and say, no, this is not my profession. This is not what I do. Go hire some singer to come to the chuppah. And the Chavos Yair said, what are you ashamed of? There's a mitzvah of Simchas Chasam Mekala. There's a mitzvah to make them happy. If you have the opportunity to do that, then that's exactly what you should do. And why would he be uncomfortable? So that's quoted by the Mishnah Brura in the name of the Chavos Yair. And that's a very important psak. It's a very beautiful psak and a very important one, which really just goes back to this Gemara, which says that Moshe Rabbeinu, in our parsha, we're told by Yakem Moshe as HaMishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu built the Mishkan. Why didn't anybody help him? At the very least, the Kohanim were around. Why couldn't they help him? Says the Gemara, of course, everybody genuinely wanted to help Moshe Rabbeinu, but they chose not to. Why they choose not to? Because it would be almost not a disgrace, but it would be a downgrade for the Mishkan if anybody else's hands were involved instead of the holy hands of Moshe Rabbeinu. That is reminding me. I once went out with a girl, and her mother told me, I hope you understand that my daughter's kadosh hands will never touch a toilet to clean it. I was like, great, your daughter will never be married to me. But that's great. I didn't say that. But it was a strange thing to say when I came to someone's house to meet their daughter, right? Can we all agree? Yeah. Yeah, strange. Just make sure your parents don't say that. That's all. It's a big turnoff. At least it was to me. Yes, question.
Oh, I was just going to ask that by Hashavas Avida, isn't there a concept that...
Unbelievable question. That is the question of the Pre-Yitzchak. That is an unbelievable question. Why is it? The one exception to the rule is Hashavas Avida. What's the halacha by Hashavas Avida? The Gemara says by Hashavas Avida, Bab Metzia. In the second parak, the Gemara says that by Hashavas Avida, the halacha is that a zakein be'eino lefi chvodo does not have to do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. What does that mean? The example my father always gave is the following. Whenever we are in shir and he spoke about Hashavas Aveda, you ask your husband, he's in the shir now, I'm sure you heard this mashal. So my father always said, imagine you have, the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda means, I find someone's computer on the desk, I don't know what to do with it, so I hang up signs, I make sure to find the owner. Okay, easy enough. When am I not obligated to do Hashavas Aveda? So the Gemara says, if it's a zakin ve'eno lefi chvodo, then I would have no obligation to do Hashavas Aveda. What does that mean? So let's just give a very simple example. Let's say, I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable, but this is just like obvious. Let's say, who's the greatest tzaddik in the world that you know of, that you knew of? I don't know. Rabbi Avadi Yosef, right? Rabbi Elyashiv, whoever it was. So you have Rabbi Avadi Yosef walking down the street, and he sees somebody's computer. So, is it embarrassing for him to pick it up and to walk to go try to do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda? No, that's fine. Nothing wrong. That reminds me, actually. Remind me to get back to your question. You want to hear an amazing story that happened a couple of years ago? So, there was a guy in YU who sends me a picture one day. He's like, Shai, I don't know what's going on, but this is, like, really strange. I'm like, what's happening? He sends me a picture of my father right outside the Gluck Base Medrash. You've seen the Base Medrash? Like, they have the big promenade out there, or whatever that is. The empty space there. So, my father's standing right outside the Base Medrash, holding a leash with a dog at the end. And this guy sends me a picture, and he's like, I have no idea what's happening, but this is amazing. So anyway, I call my father that night. I'm like, you know, how's your day? Whatever, what's going on? So, yeah, everything's fine. I'm like, you know, somebody sent me a picture. I'm just curious, like, what's the story with the dog? Like, what, you know, he's like, nothing. You know, I'm like, what do you mean nothing? Like, what happened? So he tells me the following. He's such an anav, like, he doesn't even realize how, I don't know what adjective to use to describe, like, how ridiculous this is, but, like, it's amazing. So what happened was he got, sometimes when you get a package in the mail and it's too heavy for them to get, whatever, they just send you a note and they say, come pick it up in the mail in the post office, right? So he got a package one day, and this note came to the door and said, please pick it up in the post office. So he went, and it was one of my sisters in Israel had ordered, like, new stationery or something, but, like, a huge box of stationery that was very heavy. So my father went to the post office to pick it up. Post office is, like, a 15-minute walk from YU. So he's walking with this box and he's schlepping it along through the heights, and it was like a big heavy box. So some guy stops him and he says, Rav Schechter, you know, what is that? He says, I don't know, one of my kids ordered something, I have to pick it up for them, and like, I got to run to shear, I'm trying to, you know, whatever. So the guy said, please, you know, I'll take it for you. Okay, so my father's very grateful. The guy takes it for him and he says, okay, but you'll take the dog. He was walking his dog. So my father's like, sure, no problem. So they switched. So the guy gives him the dog. And then my father's, you know, gave him the box. So they're walking together through the heights. My father with the dog and this guy with the box. They get to YU. The guy says, where's your office? I'll, you know, I don't want to leave it here in the street. Let me go upstairs. So my father says, you know, I'm on the fifth floor. You can bring it up to my office, wherever it is. Thank you so much. There's an elevator over there. Guy, okay, just wait outside here with the dog. I'll be right out. So my father's standing outside in front of the base medrash with the dog. And anyway, called him later. I'm like, Daddy, you know, you do hold a position like that's a little more mechubad than that. He's like, nah, somebody asked me to hold the dog and he's helping me out. Why shouldn't I? Like, what am I supposed to do? Anyway, that was a great story. But I was reminded of it by your question. So the point being, Hashavas Aveda goes as follows. Imagine Rav Avadya Yosef is walking down the block. And he chances upon, you know, in Israel they have those clothing lines, right? The drying racks. So imagine you have a woman's bathing suit that was on the clothing line and fell down right in front of Rav Avadya Yosef as he's walking down the block. Okay. So what does he do? He picks it up. Feels bad, right? Now what does he have to do with it? So he has to knock on every single door up and down the community, up and down the neighborhood. Knock on the door. I'm sorry, you know, did anybody lose this? Oh, wasn't you? Okay, I'm sorry. The people are like in shame. They don't know what to do. And he says, what are you laughing at? It's my mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. What am I supposed to do, right? So that's a zakin ve'eno lefi chvodo. That's a very well-respected person who's doing something that is very humiliating, that's very embarrassing to them and to the other people as well. Imagine when they finally locate the home where it did come from and the person actually accepts this lost item from Rav Avadya Yosef. It's very embarrassing for them too. But zakin ve'eno lefi chvodo means that when it's something that's beneath my dignity, I shouldn't do it. So ask Racheli a very good question. If you're telling me that whenever it comes to a mitzvah, I should never feel that it's beneath me to do this mitzvah, for example, to sing at the wedding, or to build a makkah, or to build a sukkah, or to do any of the other things that we normally do, if that's the case, then how come we have this halacha by Hashavas Aveda, which is an explicit gemara that says, Zakin ve'eno lefi chvodo, when you have somebody who is of stature, they don't have an obligation to do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda if the item that they're returning is something that is humiliating for them to be dealing with. If that is the case, then why should that fit this pattern that we just spoke about? Very, very strong question. So what do you say? What's the answer?
Well, maybe the person accepting it also feels bad, like no party to walk
off. Let's say the person on the other end is secular. Doesn't even know like that this should be uncomfortable. Right? Let's say. I don't know. So the answer is, fundamentally, the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda is a mitzvah shebeinanu lachaveira. It's a mitzvah from one individual to another. When we talk about a mitzvah shebeinanu lachaveira, like Hashavas Aveda is something, if I wouldn't do it for myself, I don't have to do it for anyone else either. So if I would never, if my own family asked me to walk around the streets with this item, I would never do it for myself. So then there's no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda to do it for somebody else either. That is considered to be below the expectation of what Hashavas Aveda would demand of me. That's the assumption. And that is why Hashavas Aveda is considered to be different than all the other mitzvahs that we observe, even though sometimes we feel uncomfortable about it. There's a story told about the Briska Rav, that the Briska Rav once had a bris for one of his great-grandchildren, I think. And at the bris, of course, all the great leaders of Yerushalayim came to participate. And the Briska Rav turned to each of them and he said, okay, maybe everybody will say a Dvar Torah. So he turns to whoever the first person was and he says, I'd like you to share some nice words. And he gets up and he says, oh, by the way, it's so special to be here, such an honor to be at the bris of the grandson of the Briska Rav, and so beautiful. And the Briska Rav said, okay, you can sit down now, like we've heard enough from you. And he's like, what do you mean? What did I say wrong? What's so offensive? And he said, why is it more special that my grandson is having a bris than anybody else's? We all have a mitzvah that when a boy is born on the Yom HaShmini, Yimal V'Sar Allah, so you have to give a bris milah. So what does it matter that it happens to be someone in my family that makes the bris more holy? It makes it more important than anyone else's? Right? Is that really the case? So the Briskerov took offense to that, and he said the proof that he finds that this is not the case is because of this story of Vayakim Moshe as HaMishkan. There's an amusing story quoted in the Shari Tshuva. We're almost done. I'm sorry. We're almost done with class. There's an amusing story in the Shari Tshuva in Hilchos Dalad Minim. The Shari Tshuva is on the bottom of the page of the Shulchan Aruch. So there, in Hilchos Dalad Minim, the Shari Tshuva writes that, it seems to me we will not be getting to this today, but the Shari Tshuva writes in Hilchos Dalad Minim that he was once in Shul on Sukkos, and he heard a whole commotion in the back of the room, and he couldn't figure out what was going on. And he turns around, and he sees people are screaming at each other, and he inquired what's going on, and it turns out, here's what happened, here's the story. They lived in a community where it was impossible to obtain a set of Dalad Minim for Sukkos. Whatever, they couldn't afford it, they couldn't get it, nobody was able to ship it. And there was one person who was very wealthy who sent out some servants before Yom Tov began, and he had them go to some other town, and he bought for a very exorbitant price, he bought the Dalad Minim, and he had them available to himself. He walks into Shul the first morning of Sukkos, they're about to say Hallel, and he comes and he whips out his Dalad Minim and he's all excited and everyone's watching. And somebody went over to him and he said, I don't understand. We have a rabbi here. The rabbi doesn't have Dalad Minim. Like, how do you dare use your own lulav and esrog without offering it to the rabbi to use? And he said, if the rabbi cared enough about doing the mitzvah, he would have arranged for himself to have one. But I went out of my way. I sent somebody in advance. I paid a lot of money for this. I deserve to use it. Now, that's a very awkward shaila to ask the rabbi. You understand? You're basically asking the rabbi, like, should we respect you or not? What's he supposed to say? So the rabbi turns around and he notices the whole commotion and he's asked, what is the halacha? Is he allowed to use his Dalad Minim? Or does he have to surrender his Dalad Minim to you first? And the rabbi said, absolutely not. Why is my mitzvah of Dalad Minim any more important than his mitzvah of Dalad Minim? We all have a mitzvah on the first day of Sukkos, u'lekachtam lachem hayom harishon, pri etz hadar, kapos tamarim. We all share in that obligation. So what does it matter if he does it or if I do it? I am no more important than him. All of us are on equal footing as far as the mitzvah is concerned. And therefore, the rabbi gave a psak that he should keep it. This individual who worked hard to get it should keep it because I am no more significant when it comes to the observance of a mitzvah than he is. When it comes to a mitzvah, all of us are on equal footing, as we saw in the opposite direction. One should never be upset or offended that this mitzvah observance is beneath me to do. There's no mitzvah that is beneath you to do. If God asks you to do it, then it's something you should do, and it doesn't matter which position you happen to hold. The question that is then asked is, why, when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, why is it that it says you should give the aliyah to the most prominent person in the room? So if there's a rabbi there, you should give him the aliyah. Why do you give him the aliyah? Why don't you say, well, when it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, we all have an obligation, so everybody should get it equally. So why is that the anomaly? Yeah. What do you say? Micha. Yeah. Right? So what do you say? Right? What does everybody say? The answer to that is because Kriyas HaTorah is a communal obligation. It is not an individual obligation. We as a tzibur have an obligation. So the question is, as a community, how should we decide? Not everybody can get an aliyah. There's only three aliyahs on a Monday and Thursday. So if not everybody can get an aliyah, who are we going to decide should get the aliyah? In that case, says the Shulchan Aruch, of course, if we are a community and we collectively have an obligation, we should do the right thing and single out the most important person in the room to do it on our behalf. But that doesn't mean to say that when it comes to other mitzvahs that everybody individually has an obligation to do, that does not mean that that would be the same logic. Of course, that would be very, very different because we each have our own individual obligation when it comes to our own individual mitzvah as well. And based on this, the poskim talk about the following discussion. I think it's in the Sholem Meshiv has a tshuva about it. Like, there's a lot of discussion in the poskim about this issue. What about when you have a shul? It's very interesting a topic when it comes up. Sometimes you have a shul. Anybody live in a community where you have a shul that used to be very, very crowded, very prominent, a lot of people daven there, and then the community, whatever, people move out and they move on? You have that in Italy?
Yeah, my community.
And it's a huge shul? And what was it, like a balcony, or it was like a women's section in the back?
No, it's a balcony.
Balcony. So it's not really so relevant to a balcony, but let's say you have a shul that's just one floor. So you have, let's say, the women's section on one side, men's section on the other side, or front back, whatever it may be. And then it turns out the dynamics of the community change. And now you want to shift the layout of the shul that it shouldn't look so empty. Right? So let's say you want to take a part of the shul and you want to make it into a social hall. So you're going to take the back wall of the shul and move it up 20 feet so that it won't look so empty. And when everybody comes, they'll sit a little more closely to each other. It seems that it's not so simple to do that. It's not so simple to do that because that would be Malim HaKodesh V'lo Moridin. This used to be a Beis HaKnesses. This used to be a shul. And now you're basically taking this property, this space that was a shul, and now you're putting it to be relegated to a social hall or to a gym. That's something that is very, very problematic. Not only that, the Sholem Eishah discusses, if let's say you want to move the women's section and now realign, let's say now you live in a community where there are many women and very few men, however that configuration happens, so you want to move the women's section over and take away from the men's section, would they be the same? Would they not be the same? Very, very interesting issue that all comes from this week's parsha of Vayakem Moshe Es HaMishkan. Yes, Racheli.
I was going to ask about the women's section.
It's a big question. Do they have the same level in a Beis HaKnesses or not? Because after all, the minyan usually davens in the men's section. The women's section is not where the minyan is. The Sefer Torah is read in the men's section. So do they have the same? Do they have different? There's a whole issue. I remember when I was growing up in Washington Heights, so we used to daven down the block from me. It was Breuer's. Breuer's is a very big shul. It got to a point where there were many women who were coming in wheelchairs and wanted to come to shul, but the women's section is in a balcony and there was no accommodation that was able to be made for them, whatever the structure of the building was. So they wanted to square off a big section of the men's section because many people had passed away and the shul was much less crowded. So they wanted to take away from the men's section downstairs and just make it into a wheelchair accessible women's section that would be available for those who wanted to come. That became a whole discussion at the time of how do you do it and what's the right way to do it, what's the wrong way to do it. It's a very, very interesting issue that has to be thought about. But again, all of that comes from a very simple pasuk in our parsha. You have a question?
Oh, no,
no question.